Good morning. I'd like to call the Coastal Commission to order this lovely sunny day in Huntington Beach and ask Ms. Miller to call the roll.
Commissioner Blank.
Here.
Commissioner Bloom.
Here.
Commissioner Bochco.
Here.
Commissioner Brennan.
Here.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Here.
Commissioner McClure.
Here.
Commissioner Norville.
Here.
Commissioner Stone.
Here.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Here.
Chair Schellenberger.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Staff, do you want to go over the changes to the agenda today?
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair and Commission. There are no changes to the agenda today. And for those members of the public that may be here to speak to the Commission, you do need to fill out a speaker slip and indicate which item you wish to speak to and whether you are in support or opposition to the staff recommendation. And also, if you could please turn off your electronic devices or put them into a silent mode, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. We'll begin with the general public comment. This is a time for the public to address the Commission on items that are not before the Commission at this time. I have three speaker slips, Brent Eccles, Jeff Bethel, and David Wood. And if you just, Craig Botley. So starting with Brett Eccles and Jeff Bethel, if you could come down and be ready to take the mic.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for this time this morning. My name is Brett Eccles, and I'm the regional commissioner of AYSO Region 97 in Newport Beach. I run a region that serves the use of Newport Beach and Costa Mesa of 1,700 to 1,800 kids, ranging from ages 4 to 16 years of age. AYSO has been an organization that served the youth of America since 1964. It's our mission to deliver quality youth soccer programs which promote a fun family environment based on our philosophies of everyone plays, open registration, balanced teams, positive coaching, good sportsmanship, and player development. As we know, cutbacks in our budgets have progressively gotten worse over time in our state. This has unfortunately filtered down to our schools and the children that they serve. The first things that go is funding for physical education and athletic training. And as a result, our kids are slowly getting left behind out of a very important component of life, and that's physical activity. AYSO has been one part of this athletic development and has grown over the years. Kids continue to choose to participate in soccer in our neighborhoods, and this is one activity that has helped them stay physically fit, mentally fit, while promoting their self-confidence, teamwork, and fun. The issue in our region is lack of field space for these 1,700 plus children to play on. In West Newport Beach, we have one field permitted for us to use. Many of our families are thus having to drive across town and across town boundaries so that their kids can play the sport of soccer. The Sunset Ridge Park development was passed by the Newport Beach City Council years ago and has been a great opportunity, potential opportunity, to serve the youth, residents, and community as a whole. This design has not only given our youth access to soccer fields and baseball fields, it also is designed to have a playground area and ample grounds to hike and enjoy the scenery that this location offers. This is not only a benefit to our youth, it is a tremendous benefit to our community and others from around the state of California to enjoy. This park will have new and more high-quality habitat beyond which presently exists. Driving by, it's a dust bowl. Now we can offer a scenic view as well as an opportunity for our youth to be served. Part of this design, which is now being questioned and ultimately holding this project up for way too long, is an access road. This road is crucial to the safety of the youth and visitors to this park. With the understanding of the neighbors and environmental impacts of this project, the city has engineered and designed.
Thank you very much. Right. Jeff Bethel.
Yes, hi, my name is Jeff Bethel, and thank you also for the opportunity to speak here today. I am a board member of Newport Beach Little League and the field coordinator, and from this in this capacity to have a good perspective on the fact that we really need more fields within the city of Newport Beach. We have over 1,200 participants in our league, and every spring and fall we have city meetings to allocate fields within the city, and it's always a big struggle to find a number, the right number of fields for all of our programs. We at lacrosse, Little League, soccer, football, flag football, the in addition, the adult leagues. So this is especially the case in West Newport. We really struggle all the time to cooperate with each other and have enough playing surfaces for all the kids to really get a good benefit of being in the leagues. We are hopeful that you agree that the Sunset Ridge Park and the Banning Ranch are two separate issues, and that we really need these fields in our league. It's something that's been designed or in the designing process for a long time, and we really hope that you can push forward and allow the kids and all the citizens of the league to benefit from the new Coastal Peak Park. Thank you.
Thank you. David Wood.
Good morning. I'm David Wood. I'm the regional field coordinator for AYSO 57, which represents Corona Del Mar, as well as portions of Newport Beach. As well, I'm a 43-year resident of Newport Beach and a father of three young children here in the community. I'm here to represent the 2,000 kids that play soccer for AYSO 57, as well as the 4,000 parents that come to those fields. And you keep doing the math and go up, there's about 8,000 grandparents that actually are huge participants and spectators of our program. And providing safe fields and locations for those kids and spectators is a big part of what we do. We are here today in support of the Sunset Ridge Park program and really hope that you make your determination here on two separate issues. The development of the park as well as the access road is an issue that we are here in support of. And we hope that that's not getting confused with the Banning Ranch development and the concerns that some of the residents have there over that proposed housing development. We're here today in support of that park and the necessary roads to provide access to that. 57 is one of the largest sports programs in the city, as well as my counterparts from the other side of the bay. As such, the city does a great job of allocating as much space as possible as they can to us, but still our biggest challenge is the amount of playing space that our kids have. We have three, four teams at a time practicing on those fields. It affects the ability for the coaches to run a full field practice, to simulate gameplay, and to really provide a quality program for our kids. The other big challenge it presents is it affects the quality of the park. Those parks don't get a chance to rest. They're played on all the time, year round. So the grass dies, it doesn't have a chance to recover, and it's our programs, baseball, on top of it. Speaking as a parent, not as field coordinator for AYSO, I want my kids to have an opportunity to play baseball, to play lacrosse, to join some other sports. The challenge is these newer programs can't get the field space that soccer can right now. We need more room to grow. You know, the funny part is I grew up here. My kids play today on some of the same parks that I played on as a kid. I'm aware of just a couple of parks that have been developed that actually include sports facilities over 43 years. There's very little room in the city to provide another facility like this. It's really important that we get this park passed at this time. The other piece of that is safe access to that. The way the city has designed that road to come in from PCH and up, there's no way you could come in off of Superior without presenting some traffic problems there and some real safety issues. And to have grandparents trying to park off-site and walking into that park, they're not going to go to those games, I can tell you that right now. So from our perspective, we're trying to keep the kids off the couches, away from the video games, and out on the parks, and playing soccer and playing other sports, so we hope you'll support the program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Craig Batley.
Good morning, Commission. My name is Craig Batley. I'm the president of the West Newport Beach Association. We cover about 15,000 residents. Association has been in existence for decades. I'm here to speak in favor of the Sunset Ridge Park as well. This is a project the city's been working on and thinking about for over 25 years. In fact, due to the efforts of one particular individual, Louise Greeley, the city eventually was able to buy this parcel of ground from Caltrans in order to, for the purpose of putting this park there. The park is surrounded by two large associations, Villa Balboa and Newport Crest. They're both in favor of this park. As you've heard, this park is in dire need in West Newport Beach. West Newport Beach has never had a park for soccer or baseball. The population of the city of Newport Beach is divided pretty much in half. There's about 42,000 on the west side of Newport Beach and about 48,000 on the east side. East side has ample fields, baseball, soccer. There's only one park on the west side that services 45,000 people, and this would be the second park that's in dire need. Not only that, from a vista standpoint, mm-hmm. and the pleasure of the residents from this park has got a great view, and the city has spent literally millions of dollars and many, many thousands of hours of time on this park. It needs to be approved. To tie this approval, this park approval to a project next door, I just don't see any logic in that whatsoever. That project, Banning Ranch project, may never be approved. You have all the opportunity and time to devote to a future project, Banning Ranch, has nothing to do with this park whatsoever. I think all the accusations about the access road and future access roads and all that, I think the staff just needs to get busy and figure out a solution on this. I really urge the staff and the commission here to focus on this and get this park approved. There's no reason to hold it up.
Thank you very much. And that's the last of our speaker slips. So we'll come back to our agenda.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. The first item of business is a de minimis waiver that is before the energy unit, and it's for PG&E to do some vegetation clearance at the Humboldt Bay Power Plant. We think the issues are minor. The work's been ordered by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and unless we hear objections from the commission, we will issue that waiver.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, you're free to issue it.
The next item of business is a PowerPoint that I have showing, that was requested by Commissioner Blank at the Watsonville meeting, showing the Pacific Grove lights. And this is an item where we're agreeing to sit down with the city and with NOAA to try to see if we can work something out, but we wanted to provide, in response to the request, just a sense of a perspective of what these look like in the area. So this slide shows the NOAA lab towards the left center. It's sandwiched between a golf course and a residential area very close to the coast. In that slide, you can't really make out the where the poles are, but they're in the parking lot, which is just seaward of the building there underneath the arrow. This one shows a little closer. It also shows the proximity to the very scenic and well-known lighthouse, Point Pinos Lighthouse. Again, it's a little bit more of a close-up. Now, here you actually can see the light poles. There are four or five of them interspersed between the cars. So what I'm going to show is first a slide with the poles and then a second slide that predates when the poles were put in. And again, across the street to the right is where the residential area. But obviously, this road is a public road, and you do have views from the road, and some of the other slides will show what they look like as you're on the road. Here's a slide from 2008, and this is where we don't have the poles. So I don't know if I can go back. So this is a after and then a before. There are, in this picture, a flagpole and several telephone poles. And then the next couple of slides are the ones that you saw that were shown in Watsonville, really from the road just to the east of the facility, the buildings, that green structure on the right. And those are the poles, and the rectangular areas at the top are the solar panels. This is obviously the ocean view from the road. Looking back inland from the site, from the road, from the edge of the road towards the building, and again, the poles are prominent in this picture and very prominent as you're standing right next to them, again, on the public road. couple of shots of the lights at night showing that they're fairly well shielded so that they point down and don't illuminate a very wide area. And then just same slide from just a little bit farther away. These last two slides were provided by NOAA. So again, we'll be meeting with the city and NOAA to try to figure out whether there are alternatives and discuss if there are things that can be done to improve the situation and provide for better relations between the local residents and NOAA and the city and us. So we're going to do our best. We'll that's going to be at the end of October, and we'll be coming back to you at the next meeting reporting how that went.
Madam Chair, if I could just give just a little bit more context, could you put the slide 2 up there again? These issues are all, I think, contextual, and it depends on the surrounding environment, maybe the prior one that shows a little bit further back. But this is an area in Pacific Grove where we've spent, really since our inception, protecting dune habitat and requiring avoidance and restoration of dune Esha, and you can see some of the patches of dune Esha. Here's a sense of it. It continues on down coast from here, but you can see the areas where there are active restored dunes as opposed to the ice plant or golf course that you see. And visual impacts and the character of this area is also a critical piece of that effort under the land use plan that's been certified. And so there has been quite a bit of concern about projects like this over the years, just to give you that context. The other thing I wanted to point out is that house in the foreground on the shoreline is one of the few structures along the shoreline in this area until you get down to Pebble Beach and Spanish Bay. And we were not able to avoid residents there, but we did work effectively for many long years to secure an access OTD across that property, which will complete a coastal trail in this area. So I just wanted to point that out while the slide was up.
Commissioner Stone.
Just a brief comment, and that slide really shows the City of Pacific Grove is very proud of their wild coastline and the work that they've done, and they feel that they're real partners with us and have very, very similar values in protecting coastal resources. So when they bring this up and they're concerned about it by their standard as well as ours, I think I'm very glad that you're facilitating those meetings and can work hopefully a solution between the city and the federal government there.
We've had a really strong working relationship with the city, particularly on the dune restoration. And if you've ever driven through here, you can see the properties that have come forward either for new homes or redevelopment, because they're typically the ones that have dune habitat surrounding the structure versus older looking homes that might be covered with ice plant and degraded habitat. So it's a really good case study to see the effectiveness of our program in actively protecting and restoring dune habitats in an existing developed area.
Yeah, and as I say, it's great to have a community that is so proudly partnering with us on these issues.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item is the North County Transit District, a public hearing on a consistency certification. The staff is, we have one slide to show, and if you'd like to see more, the applicant has a more lengthy slide presentation. Staff is recommending concurrence with the North County Transit District's certification. We had a couple of very minor corrections to the staff report. On pages 2 and 4, there's a reference to work that was completed in 2010, which should have said 2011. And there's a reference to the wrong lagoon on page 3. It should have said San Dieguito Lagoon, not Los Penasquitos Lagoon. This work is on the south side of the San Dieguito River. It's to help support the rail line that parallels I-5 and serves the Los Angeles-San Diego corridor. The abutment is fairly old, and the commission authorized deepening of the San Diego Lagoon, and that's changed the hydrology and forced a need for strengthening this. And in fact, the commission has authorized a first phase of this strengthening, and this is a second phase. So the work is needed to support the rail line. The riprap is going to be replaced and revegetated. It's pretty much a replacement in kind in terms of the location of the activity, although it will be strengthened. And we didn't see any issues. There will be revegetation with native species, and it's consistent with the wetland. It's an allowable use. It's the least damaging alternative. They're using appropriate best management practices, so we believe it's consistent with the Coastal Act, and we're recommending concurrence. And the motion is on page 5, and the applicant is here, I believe, if you want a presentation from them.
Are there any ex parte communications on this? Seeing none, I do have speaker slips, but they are for questions only. Is there any unwillingness for a unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, the commission hereby concurs with the consistency certification for this project.
Thank you. The next item, 5B, is a consistency determination from NOAA, National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, for funding to the Yurok Tribe to build a fish processing facility. The facility is on the north side of the Klamath River in Del Norte County. It's a site that's been disturbed. It's relatively level. It's a good location for this kind of facility as far as we're concerned. We don't normally very often review federal funding matters other than federal funding to state and local government, but this is before you as a consistency matter, partly because it's the land actually isn't technically in the coastal zone. It's been placed in trust, and we did authorize the placement of that land in trust. And the fact that there's a what we call a residual category for federal activities that don't fit into other nice, neat categories, they are basically treated as consistency determinations, which means for you the standard of review is consistency to the maximum extent practicable with the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act, which is what we've analyzed in our staff report. Here's an aerial looking down. The project is on the northwest portion of that level area, the disturbed area. The remainder of the site, the whole site's been used for basically centuries by the Yurok Tribe for fishing-related activities. In this case, the middle of the project site to the right of where the arrow is used as a recreational vehicle park, and just on the riverside of that, there's a public boat launch. So it's used for recreation and fishing-related facilities. It has been for a long time, since before the Coastal Act. There was a period of time when there was actually a cannery, an industrial use on the site, but it's been many decades since it's had that kind of use. What happened in the early 2000s is there were some disasters in the fish catch, and at one point we had 30-some thousand dead salmon at the mouth of the river. Because of a number of things that happened for a period of time, because of drought conditions, the area was basically declared a disaster, and funds were secured for relief, and the tribe applied for this NOAA grant to build a fishery on the site. We believe it's an appropriate use of the site. It's coastal related. We're recommending conditional concurrence, and we passed out this morning a revised condition. And basically what it does is it allows a second option. In all the issues we looked at, we felt there was possibly one concern. Here's a close-up of where the site is. Right where the tip of the arrow is, a little bit to the south of that, there's a disturbed creek running through the area. It's basically a man-made drainage ditch, but because there was some riparian habitat, our original recommendation was that the building be set back 50 feet from the riparian corridor. They indicated that was going to be problematic because of the topography, so we went out to the site, and we've agreed at a staff level that an alternative way to make the findings that you need to make is to have the tribe restore the creek, which restore the habitat, restore the riparian and the native habitat, and improve the quality of the habitat, and we felt that would be better resource protection-wise than moving the corner of the building, which did come closer than 50 feet to that stream. So we're recommending that they be allowed to comply with the Coastal Act by restoring the creek, and the applicant, NOAA, and the tribe have both agreed that that's appropriate, and they intend to follow through with that if you vote to adopt that condition. And under that condition, they wouldn't be constructing until we've signed off on the plan, and they would be monitoring and other measures similar to the kinds of things we see in restoration plans. As you can probably see, if you look at the staff report that discusses some of the historic actions by the commission, we've developed a pretty positive working relationship with the Yurok Tribe. And once we started having discussions with them about some procedural issues, we realized that from a resource protection perspective, we really do have values very much in common with them, and we're happy with that relationship, and that they have a true desire to restore the creek. That doesn't mean we haven't looked at other issues. There are a number of issues addressed in the staff report: flooding, geologic hazards, tsunami run-up, water quality. One of the things we looked into is what happens along the stretch of the river if the dams at the upper in the upper river are removed, which is something that we would really like to see happen. Would that mean more flooding? But it turns out this area is so broad that it isn't going to make hydrological changes at the near the mouth. So that shouldn't be an issue. We looked at view protection. We looked, again, very carefully after Wednesday's hearing at the night lighting. It's probably going to be a reduction in night lighting. There will be a little bit of lighting, but it's probably not any different than the other activities related to fishing that happen during the same times of the year. There's no external lighting. Any lights that are on the building will be pointed, will have a very small area of illumination. So our recommendation is conditional concurrence. The motion is on page 7 of the staff report. The condition itself is on page 1 of the addendum we passed out. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes? Seeing none, I have no speaker slips. Commissioner Kinsey.
I move the commission conditionally concur with the consistency determination CD038-11.
Is your mic on?
On the basis that as conditioned, the project will be fully consistent and thus consistent to the maximum extent practical with the enforcement policies of the California Coastal Management Program.
Second. It's been moved by Commissioner Kinsey, seconded by Commissioner McClure. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, but I will acknowledge that we did receive some additional clarifications today, and I consider that in making the motion.
Great. Commissioner McClure, any unwillingness for unanimous? Oh, sorry, somebody else? Commissioner Zimmer.
Thank you. I had a question on the buffer. I really appreciate seeing this responsiveness and flexibility to the site-specific conditions in staff's agreement to this alternative method of mitigating the impacts to the riparian corridor. But I'm wondering, because I'm seeing in the LCPs that have been coming forward a fairly consistent recommendation of a 100-foot buffer, and I guess I'm hoping that in looking at those LCPs, we can be considering these kinds of alternative site-specific plans that can meet our goals as well.
Yes, through the chair, usually we start with 100 feet. It's a presumptive protective measure, and then it's not uncommon for an LCP to have some sort of variance procedure, which would require site-specific analysis of constraints and whether the functional equivalent of 100 feet could be met. And on occasion, we've actually built into the LCP specific variations on that theme. For example, in the city of Santa Cruz, they came forward with an amendment to the LCP for all of the riparian corridors in the city, and each of the buffers were individually crafted for each of those resources, and they varied from more than 100 feet for very relatively undeveloped creeks and watersheds to, as you know, 25 feet in a highly urbanized urban riparian corridor.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the commission hereby conditionally concurs with the consistency determination on the grounds that the project is fully consistent and thus consistent to the maximum extent practicable with the enforceable policies of the CCMP.
Thank you. That brings us to the Central Coast District, and under the Deputy Director's report, we do have 4 waivers and 2 immaterial extensions to report, and I'm not aware of any objections to those items.
Any unwillingness? For unanimous concurrence. Seeing none, they're concurred in.
And item 6A is concurrence with the Executive Director's determination that the action by Monterey County accepting certification of Major Amendment 1-10 with modifications, which was a redesignation and rezoning of a site in an existing developed area, is legally adequate.
Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, it's been concurred with.
So item 6.5A is a time extension for a City of Pismo Beach LCP amendment, open space landscaping, and we are recommending that the Commission extend time to allow us further opportunity to evaluate this item, and the motion is to extend for up to 1 year.
Any ex partes? Seeing none, the will of the commission.
I move to extend the time for the City of Pismo Beach LCP Amendment Number PSB-1-10 Part 1 for 1 year.
It's been moved by Commissioner Zimmer, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Would you like to speak to it?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Any unwillingness for unanimous yes? Seeing none, the time extension has been granted.
And Madam Chair, under the North Central Coast District, we do have one waiver to report, and again, I'm not aware of any opposition or objection to that item.
Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, it's deemed concurred in.
And that would bring us to item 9A, and I was wondering if the commission might indulge us with a 10-minute break, because I understand that may benefit the next hour or so, if we could have 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a short break.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for your accommodating a short break. We've had some. We had late breaking issues related to adjacent property owners in the next item, but we'll get into those details. Item 9A is an application in the City of Pacifica by AIMCO at Esplanade Avenue Apartments in Pacifica. To follow up authorization of work that was performed under emergency permits, including riprap shoreline revetment and a soil nail wall on Esplanade Avenue in Pacifica. You do have two addendums, I think, in front of you for this, but what I wanted to highlight right now is forget the second addendum. That was partly what we were discussing. So that is no longer part of the staff recommendation. And we will be making a slight adjustment to the first addendum. Which you have, and we can go into those details when we get into the substance of the matter. But I'd like to ask Nick Dreher, who's an analyst out of San Francisco, to present the overview of the project.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. This is application number 208020, item 9A of today's agenda. Next slide. Slide 2 shows the general vicinity. This project is located in the Edgemar Pacific Manor area of Pacifica. Next slide, please. As you can see on slide 3, this project involves after-the-fact authorization for work performed under six emergency permits between 1998 and 2010, as well as proposed new construction, including construction of a rock riprap revetment along the toe of the bluff, totaling approximately 475 feet, three soil nail wall segments totaling approximately 7,722 square feet, and an engineered, vegetated, and reconstructed slope. This work is proposed to protect the existing multi-residential structures at 360 and 380 Esplanade Avenue from continued erosion. The applicant also proposes a 14,171 square foot public access dedication on 360 Esplanade Avenue, which you can see in the in slide 3 in the hatched area on the beach there. And the applicant also proposes a $289,014.96 payment to mitigate the impacts of the development. As you can see here on this slide, the proposed revetment is located both on the applicant's property at 360 Esplanade Avenue on the left and city-owned beach property at seaward of 380 Esplanade Avenue on the right, while the proposed soil nail walls are located on the applicant's bluff at 360 Esplanade Avenue alone. Neighboring property owners, in particular, the owner at 340 Esplanade Avenue, have raised some concerns regarding the removal of rock from their property along the beach and bluff, and we will address some of these concerns a little bit later. It has to do with the first addendum that was released that you should have received yesterday. Slide four. To provide you with some context, over the past few years, a number of revetments, soil nail walls, and in one instance, a vertical seawall have been placed upcoast and downcoast of the subject properties. Accordingly, the adjacent and nearby beaches represent a mix of open and moderately accessible beaches hampered in many areas by large placements of rock revetment. Next slide, Charles. Slide five shows the shoreline immediately upcoast of the proposed project. Much of the nearby rock revetments, as well as the soil nail wall upcoast of the subject property, were placed pursuant to numerous emergency permits. At this point, however, much of the development is now unpermitted. A vertical seawall authorized by emergency permit located upcoast at 100 Esplanade, the Land's End Apartments, is currently under construction, and we expect to bring the follow-up application to you soon. The largely undeveloped Pacifica coastline to the north of Esplanade Avenue is largely unarmored, north of Land's End. Slide six shows the shoreline immediately downcoast of the proposed project. The city-owned parcel in the top left is 400 Esplanade Avenue is unarmored. The majority of the coastline to the south of 400 Esplanade, as you can see in the bottom right corner, is armored with permitted rock revetment placed by the city. This rock is subject to reauthorization in 2014 and again in 2019. The AIMCO project before you is one of many that will soon be before the commission, and it is the hope of staff that a bigger picture plan will be put into place to address the unpermitted rock and other shoreline protective devices in order to improve lateral and vertical public access, among other things. As depicted in slides 7 and 8, the applicant has separated the coastline along 360 and 380 Esplanade Avenue into 8 areas in order to explain the precise proposed alterations to the revetment temporarily approved under the past emergency permits. Areas 1 through 7B correspond to the bluff and beach in front of 360 Esplanade Avenue, and Area 8 corresponds to the bluff and beach in front of 380 Esplanade Avenue. The applicant is proposing to retain, remove, and/or rework the entire revetment. The proposed project involves a total of 7,125 tons of rock, covering 8,950 square feet of beach. The proposed project also involves follow-up authorization for a 4,600 square foot soil nail wall, as actually in Area 3, as shown on slide 9, and 2 new soil nail walls to support the mid and upper bluff at 360 Esplanade. One in Area 4 would cover approximately 1,322 square feet of bluff face, and the other in Area 7A would cover no more than 1,800 square feet of bluff face. These walls will be installed along sections of the bluff that are currently covered by rock revetment, but some rock revetment will remain below the soil nail walls. A soil nail wall is preferable to rock revetment because it is less impactful of the visual resources. As conditioned, these walls will be required to implement texturing and coloring measures to blend the walls with a natural bluff. In total, the project would involve no more than 7,722 square feet of soil nail wall along the bluff face at 360 Esplanade Avenue and no soil nail walls at 380 Esplanade Avenue. As you can see in slide 10 shows the existing condition, and slide 11 is a simulation of the project proposal. The proposed project will result in unavoidable impacts to coastal resources. The rock revetment and, to a lesser extent, the sawmill walls will adversely impact visual resources due to shoreline protection on the beach that is not indicative of the surrounding natural beach and bluff. And as you know, shoreline protection generally will result in some impacts related to aesthetics and marine resource habitat and shoreline sand supply, such as encroachment and passive erosion, as well as public access, in this case, lateral access along the beach. However, this proposed project is a better and less impactful, less environmentally damaging feasible alternative to the existing shoreline protection placed pursuant to the emergency permits. While significant impacts remain, the applicant's proposed mitigation, which included the offer to dedicate lateral access on 360 Esplanade and the mitigation payment, staff believes these will mitigate these impacts to the maximum extent feasible. Staff is recommending approval with a number of conditions that address the direct impact of that proposed revetment and soil nail walls on these coastal resources, such as I mentioned, scenic quality, public access and recreation, sand supply, and the impacts on the adjacent public beach and state tidelands that result from armoring the bluffs. And as I mentioned, the applicant has proposed a project that minimizes the identified impacts to the maximum extent feasible. The current proposal removes 40% of the existing emergency rock, relocates the revetment slightly landward, replaces certain rock with two textured and colored soil nail walls, replaces certain rock with an engineered, vegetated, reconstructed slope, and includes the sand supply mitigation payment and the offer to dedicate that I mentioned over 360 Esplanade. Staff did request that the applicants analyze the feasibility of constructing a vertical seawall to avoid encroachments on the beach to improve lateral access and visual resource impacts. However, the structural viability of a vertical seawall at this location would depend on the placement of tow protection, thereby amounting to rock similar to that which is currently armoring this bluff. Therefore, a vertical seawall would not be a less environmentally damaging feasible alternative, rather an equally damaging alternative to the proposed revetment. Due to the uncertainties inherent in providing shoreline protection in a dynamic environment, including the unknown effects of climate change and sea level rise, staff is recommending under special conditions 2 and 3 that the proposed shoreline protection only be authorized for 20 years from the date of this approval or any approval. Such authorization for a limited period of time acknowledges that the revetment and soil nail walls are not necessarily permanent structures and allows for a reassessment of site conditions in the future. That concludes my presentation.
And Madam Chair, if I could just add a little more detail on the issues between adjacent property owners. Basically, because of the property configuration, and I don't know if you can go back to a slide that shows the parcel lines from above, but because of the property configuration, the rock that was necessary, here you can see this is the property line here, and the rock that was placed in emergency actions was originally going to be in this area on the applicant's property, but due to ongoing erosion and bluff failure, the logical place to put the rock was immediately at the toe, which ended up in looking back to be on neighboring property. During the emergency permit, these property owners assented to that placement of rock, but now we have disputes between the neighboring property owners as to what to do with that rock. And so the original recommendation provided a certain amount of time for them to work out their differences there. We're extending that time from 60 days to 6 months to allow them to work on this. The actual work that would happen here wouldn't occur till next season anyway, so we have time to give them the opportunity to either agree to the project as we're recommending it be approved, namely that a significant amount of rock would come out in this area, or submit an application to do something otherwise that justifies why it should be retained on their property. So that's the nature of the current recommendation, and with the first addendum only, which also adds an indemnification to protect our interests in light of this dispute, we believe that we can recommend approval as conditioned and with the offered mitigation. And we can go into more detail if you want, but it's a little messy.
Okay, thank you. Are there any ex partes? Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On October 3rd, I had a telephone call with Susan McCabe regarding this project. We discussed the background of the subject site and various shoreline protection efforts that have been utilized to protect the existing blufftop structure from severe erosion and high wave action. The current application permanently authorizes work undertaken by both previous and current owners through emergency permits dating back to 1998. Past work included placement of rock revetment along the toe of the slope and a soil nail wall along the upper bluff. The applicant is now proposing a project revision that involves removal of approximately 42% of the existing rock and construction of a new soil nail wall segments as necessary. Staff is recommending the approval with conditions to address sand supply and the waste mitigation, the amount stated earlier, $289,000, and some 96 cents, which one day I'd like to know how we came up with that exact amount. But and so that being said, they're supporting the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Commissioner Bochco.
On October 3rd, I had a meeting with Susan McCabe and Sean Finnegan, who represented the applicants, and the information was very similar to Commissioner Brennan's.
Commissioner Zimmer.
On October 3rd, I had a telephone conference with Susan McCabe, Ann Blanker, Sean Finnegan, the AIMCO regional development planner. Ms. McCabe indicated AIMCO is one of the largest apartment owners in the country. This is for a seawall for two buildings in Pacifica. There's a long history. After the storms of 99, the prior owner applied for emergency permits for rock in front of the property. AIMCO purchased the property in 2006. Permanent permits had been obtained from the city but not received from the Coastal Commission. After the storms of 2007-09, AIMCO lost 40 feet of property and asked for more permits. They worked with Coastal staff, and a few months ago, Coastal staff wanted less of a beach profile, so they have come back with a proposal to remove 42% of the rock. Mr. Finnegan referred to their briefing packet and went through that, and indicated that sheet 11 of that shows the 42% of rock to be removed. They're not aware of any opposition at that moment. They were in agreement with the conditions. Mitigation goes by the Coastal Commission formula, and they're voluntarily offering lateral access. They indicated there's vertical access 1/4 mile north and 1/4 mile south, and that the use of this beach is only by 10 to 12 people a day. To the south is all city-owned recreational property.
Thank you. Commissioner Bloom.
Thank you. On September 28th at 3 p.m. in Santa Monica, I met with Mr. Finnegan and Ms. McCabe and had a conversation that sounds a lot like those disclosed by the prior three commissioners.
Commissioner Blank, Stone.
Thank you. I had submitted an ex parte form, but I didn't see it in the packet, so I'm going to read it. On the 28th of this month at 10, I had a teleconference from my office. On the phone were Ann Blumker, Susan McCabe, Sean Finnegan, and Patty Schwader. And the text of it, I wrote, I received a briefing from representatives of the developer who took me through a briefing book that they had provided previously to staff. They showed that the project is to remove rock placed on the beach and up the slope in front of one of the buildings and to place soil nail walls. The plan still leaves quite a bit of rock on the beach. The properties predate the Coastal Act, they said, and they said that they're in agreement with staff's recommendation and had not heard of any opposition. This project will make permanent two emergency actions where rock was placed on the beach and part of the bluff slope to protect the structures. Thanks.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. Yes, I did have an ex parte with Susan McCabe and the other individuals that were just mentioned by Commissioner Stone on Monday, October 3rd, by phone. We covered the same items that were just mentioned by the commissioner.
Thank you. And I had a telephone conversation with Sean Finnegan and Susan McCabe on September 29th at 4. I told them that I had gone through the briefing booklet and asked them to go straight to the two pictures of what's currently there and what's being proposed. We talked about the differences between them. I then asked them if the formula for the sand mitigation was our usual formula. They said it was. They said they supported the staff recommendation, were unaware of any opposition, and so it was a fairly short ex parte. Commissioner Blank.
Yes, Madam Chair. On September 26th at 4 p.m. in Pescadero, I met with Sean Finnegan, Patty Schwader, and Susan McCabe, and the substantive description of the communication was identical to that of the other commissioners.
Commissioner McClure.
Yes, on September 30th at 3:30 on via phone, I met with Sean Finnegan, Susan McCabe, and Ann Blumlicher, and the same information was passed as we went through the briefing.
Thank you. Commissioner Sanchez? No. All right, with that, I will open the public hearing, and we have three speaker slips here from the project proponent. Come forward and tell me how much time you would like, and...
Chair Schellenberger, my name is Sean Finnegan with AIMCO. Approximately 10 minutes. I shouldn't take nearly that long.
And will all three of your speakers speak, or are you doing the presentation?
I'll be doing the presentation. If needed, they're here for questions.
Fine. Oh, I see it says that. Sorry. Okay, fine. 10 minutes, and I have no opposition, so you won't have any need for a rebuttal time.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Schellenberger, members of the Commission, again, my name is Sean Finnegan with AIMCO. We're the owners of 360 and 380 Esplanade. I'd like to first start out by thanking staff for all their hard work over the past couple of years on this project and to state that we are in 100% agreement with the staff report, the project conditions, and the mitigation measures as stated in the report. Real quickly on the slide here that you see, 360, 380 Esplanade, the buildings with the white roofs. A little bit about the site history. A few of the commissioners mentioned it in their ex parte. In 1999, our previous owner installed some rock revetment in front of 380 Esplanade and a small portion of 360 Esplanade. In the winter months of 2002 and 2003, via aerials, we've discovered that there was erosion at between 310 and 360 Esplanade of a drainage swale. Then in 2006, we bought the property, assuming that all permits had been established for the property. The winter months of 2007 and 2008, another 5 to 10 feet of bluff failure occurred in that same stretch of the bluff, including our property at 360. Then unfortunately, in February of 2008, 20 to 30 feet also came off in that same stretch of the bluff, including our property. During year of 2008, AIMCO proceeded to do some improvements on its apartments. Met with staff out in the field. They determined that those improvements were exempt. However, we discussed the fact that the existing rock on the property had not gone through the proper permanent CDP process. So therefore, in June of 2009, we embarked on a CDP application that created those emergency permits of rock placed in 1998 to be permanent in a permanent CDP application, and also to add additional rock and soil nail walls to address the previous year's bluff failures. We then, in December of 2009, unfortunately, we lost another 30 to 40 feet of bluff right in front of our property. We advanced our application to an emergency permit and installed rock revetments and a soil nail wall. Since then, we've been working with staff on a permanent CDP application. Then, more recently, we worked with staff on a revised project which removed a portion of the revetment and reduced the structural footprint. The project in front of you is, as staff has said, a 475-foot long rock revetment, which results in 42% of the rock that's out there today being removed. In addition, some small soil nail walls will be in place of some of that rock that is being removed. The next two slides, if we can flip back and forth between them two, shows the amount of rock being removed. It's pretty easy to see as you're flipping back and forth in front of the V building. You can see rock that's going to be on an earthen slope or a soil nail wall when that rock is removed. The proposed mitigation measures, as staff has indicated, is $290,000 in sand fee mitigation to be used locally for coastal access reasons. In addition, an offer to dedicate a 14,000 square feet of our property in 360 Esplanade. And with that, I'd like to conclude by once again thanking staff for all their time and working on this application, and that we are in agreement with the staff report, its conditions and mitigation measures. And if it's permits staff the 6-month time frame to work on the adjacent property owners, we'd even be willing to do that in 4 months just to get the process moving along. So with that, that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Staff, do you have anything to add?
Yes, I would just like to make some specific language change so that it's reasonably clear going forward. In your second addendum, there was second addendum is no longer part of the recommendation. First addendum, subsection 5, that proposes amendments to special condition 11, we would not strike the language that is shown stricken and not add the language that is shown added, but rather change the language that is shown stricken in the addendum to the following. Within 6 months of Coastal Commission action on this CDP application, or within such additional time as the executive director may grant for good cause, and unless an application to retain rock on property not owned by the applicant is submitted to the Coastal Commission for review, the permittee shall provide written evidence of the full consent of any underlying landowner of the proposed project to the extent the construction activities approved herein include removal or alteration of rock on property not owned by the permittee.
Thank
that
you.
That concludes our remarks.
Thank you. Commissioner Zimmer.
Yes, I had a couple questions. When were these two buildings constructed, if staff knows?
I don't think we know exactly, but they were pre-Coastal Act.
Yeah. And do we have a sense of what the useful life of these buildings is expected to be?
You may want to ask the owner of the buildings.
We may want to do that. That's a good question, and it's one that we're struggling with increasingly in these kinds of issues because our setback policies are usually premised on an economic life of a structure. Mm-hmm. In practice, we've had a difficult time tying up the back end of what that means because just as in this case, structures are often renovated, and in fact, these buildings were recently renovated to make them newer and nicer, and I'm not sure what that did to the economic life of them, but they've been here probably since the 50s or 60s, so they're mm-hmm.
well,
on the order of 50 years old.
I was particularly wondering that because of the condition that limits a permit to 20 years and how that might relate to what the otherwise remaining useful life of a structure might be. And then secondly, in special condition 3B, it's made clear that future redevelopment of a bluff top parcel will have to comply with policy. So the next question for me is, do we have a bright line definition of redevelopment as opposed to renovation, as opposed to repair, so that we would know, or a future commission would know, when we're dealing with that situation, if the intent long term is to not have these protective structures?
And yes, in this specific case, page 8 of your staff recommendation, condition 3B, mm-hmm. addresses this issue.
It's right there. Okay.
It does require that basically your authorization would say that this is approved for this development, and then it does say that any future redevelopment shall not rely on the permitted devices, and then it goes on to define redevelopment in that condition.
Okay.
But this is an area that we're continuing to refine, and we are attempting to deal with that question that I think you're asking a little more directly. So in 20 years, there'll be the opportunity to ask this.
Okay.
But I know others may have questions about that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Stone.
Thank you. And that's certainly one of the frustrations and the things that we face. And if you look at the geology of this area, they are very sandy cliffs. We've had the apartment, which is really just up coast from this one, we saw some pretty dramatic landslides there, and I think that one building in that of that cluster has been red tagged. And if we keep protecting things like this, if you extrapolate it out, and in this area less time geologically than you would others, but you know, within the next, I'm not sure how long, but maybe even a matter of decades, you'll probably start to see the bluffs just up coast and down coast receding dramatically, leaving more and more and more of an island. And at some point, this property is not going to be viable without major work or potentially, if we make an armored island out of it, then bridges to get to it. So at some point, these bluffs are just going to continue to do what they naturally do. In this case, because it predates the Coastal Act, our policy has been to allow armoring on here. But at some point, and that's why the 20 years, it gets to be a little bit ridiculous even to try and protect structures against the immense forces that are acting there. And I'm glad we're removing some of the rock. I know it's a bit of practice in the ex parte. In the briefing book, they show up and down this area where the way to address coastal erosion is to throw a bunch of rock on the beach. And if you look at each of those instances, you see tons of rocks on the beach, which is denying access, which is sort of exacerbating some of the other problems up and down this area of coast. And it's ugly. It's really an inappropriate way in other ways to address coastal armoring. So I'm glad we're at least removing some of the rock that's there, and hopefully that'll facilitate a little bit more access along this coast. But this is a very, very difficult area because of the rates of erosion, especially that we've seen over the last 10 years. And as the sea level increases, as rains increase, as there's more saturation, the erosion in this area specifically may very well escalate. And it's hard to know what's going to happen through there.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had two questions, basically as a follow-up. That is, staff did indicate that this was, in the beginning of the presentation, that this was especially a way of addressing some anticipated other requests. And so you were looking at it kind of like a holistic kind of approach as to how best to address these issues for these individual property owners. But I didn't get that from the presentation, and what staff is thinking about in terms of a holistic approach, because I am concerned about the, you know, how the erosion, what the erosion is going to do to beach access. And the second question, so I don't know if you're prepared to give us a few words about that. And the second one is having to do with the mitigation. This is, I'm assuming this is mitigation in lieu fee is mitigation for 20 years of impact and impact to public access. And I see that there's some dedication going on, but is there anticipated some kind of access for the public, like some kind of stairway? Or you didn't show where the public has access to the beach. So if you could really address those two, I'd really appreciate it.
Yes, Commissioner Sanchez, those questions are directly related, and I think mostly what we were contemplating there is that question of how to protect beach resources, recreational and beach access in particular, looking more broadly at what's going on here. I don't know if you could go back to that slide that shows 400 Esplanade, which is a city-owned property right next to just down coast of AIMCO. There is public access there currently. Although it's undeveloped, it's actually I don't think you can see it here. There's another slide that shows more, but even in the middle of that parcel of 400 there, I think just off screen, it's a road that has been used to access the beach here to do all of this work, and that is also a public access. In effect, you can walk down there. It's not developed. It's not ideal, and so one of the thoughts was to somehow use mitigation in lieu fees or contributions from multiple properties along here to have a developed access stairway there. That's just a concept at this point, but that's one of the ideas of the holistic approach, looking at the combined
Well, see, that makes sense that you would be thinking in terms of a project, and instead of in lieu, an actual, you know, contribution per property.
Yes, and the challenge is always to have that specific project ready to go at the time you're acting, and so this is a sort of an interim strategy to make sure that we're getting adequate mitigation, but also contemplate how to provide actual access in the future. There's also an accessway that's under construction right now in the seawall that Nick talked about up coast at the Land's End property. So there will be access north of here, and then there is access but undeveloped south on 400. You can just see the accessway there on the edge of that picture there, where you can get down. But the Coastal Conservancy is involved, the City of Pacifica is involved, all of these applicants are involved, so it's not a straightforward solution. You have to work with all of them and figure out how to get that done. But that's what we were thinking. And in terms of the mitigation, yes, it actually starts from the time of the original revetment placed in 98 up through the 20-year authorization. So,
can you tell us how you came up with that number?
That number was derived through our method that we typically use for sand supply and beach impacts, the in-lieu fee. But as some of you know who've looked at a number of these, we're also still refining and looking to come up with a more systematic mitigation approach rather than the case-by-case one that is driven by what's going on here. This is a little bit of both. We've got the access dedication and the fee, and we looked at the impacts and felt that in the scheme of things, this was proportional to those impacts and an appropriate mitigation. Adjacent property owners are going to have to face a similar kind of thing, so equal to or better, depending on what their impacts are.
Thank you.
Commissioner Stone.
Thank you. I move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit Number 2-08-020 pursuant to the staff's recommendation as just amended, and asking for a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Brennan. Commissioner Zimmer.
In looking again on the definition of redevelopment that staff pointed out, I became concerned on hearing that this building was very recently completely renovated. So I'm concerned that allowing an additional 50% of improvements before the definition kicks in the future is kicking the can down the road to an inappropriate place in terms of extending the nonconformity. So I'm wondering whether others would support reducing that future enablement for this property of additional renovation. Guess not. Thank you.
I'll take an amendment.
Well, then I'd like to propose an amendment to the effect that given that there was a complete renovation very recently, that there would not be additional renovation permitted, only repair and maintenance.
Second it for discussion. I'd like to hear staff's thoughts on the subject.
One thought was we should check with the applicant because I don't know exactly what the nature of the renovation was. I know there were some exterior cosmetic changes, and then there was some interior work, I understand, but they may want to give you more detail on the exact nature of that, so I wouldn't have a sense of how to change that.
Would they?
Are you asking them to come forward?
I would appreciate it.
If we could have a representative from the applicant.
And while they're stepping forward, I'd like staff to address the broader policy implications for the commission when he's done. Yes, when the applicant's done.
Do you understand the question?
Yes, Chair, members of the commission.
Your name for the record.
I'm sorry, my name is Sean Finnegan with AIMCO, owners of 360-380 Esplanade. The renovations that happened were, in fact, just like staff said, to both buildings, cosmetic changes, to the exterior and the interior units taken from 40 to 50-year-old apartments to add, an extra appliance, modify new carpet, new flooring, that type of thing. Most of the things were done on the inside, added some fitness equipment that was pretty run down. So that type of modifications is what occurred. And I'd like to add that the area is in a certified LCP.
Commissioner Bloom, you had a question for staff?
I'm sorry, could I just ask him one question?
Yes, of course, sorry.
Can you estimate whether the work that was done, and please, what year was the work done, if you know?
The work done, as I had mentioned in my presentation, was done in late 2008.
Okay. And would it be your estimation that the work was done resulted in an alteration of 50% or more
No.
of the structure?
No.
So it didn't meet that,
No,
that trigger?
No, far from that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Bloom.
Does staff have any further information or thoughts on this subject?
Just that sounds consistent with my understanding. And then on this approach, which I mentioned we're trying to refine for dealing precisely with this question up and down the coast, it's a little, I think it does need some consideration as to how you define redevelopment, because right now, as written, it's focused on what we've done in the past and what a lot of local governments do when looking at a non-conforming use and whether to make it conforming. They look to what extent you're changing exterior walls or foundations, structural components of a development to trigger that threshold, as opposed to interior remodels, which might, you know, make the interior new and but wouldn't change the walls or the roof and the shape. And that's kind of what we have right now, the 50% of exterior and interior walls. And some of you may remember this came up in another case last year where that was the question in front of you, which was what percentage of work was going on here to what parts of the building, and did it trigger the need to conform? So I think in this case, the way we've written it, the prior work would not trigger that 50% here, because I don't think they changed the floor plan, for example, the interior walls or the exterior walls.
Unless people are excited. I'm sorry.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that was my understanding, too. Council member, we look to that to see if there's a need for a permit, and if it doesn't meet that substantial change rule, then the city can't force the property owner to get these extra permits and things. So I think that there are rules in place that protect the coastal policies that we're enforcing, and I'm not sure that I really want to add something else at this point vis-a-vis something like redevelopment. I think is more of a term of art that isn't used to describe the construction or the a changing of a building or property as much as a program. So I'm not sure that something I can support.
And Madam Chair, based on the further description of what did actually occur, I'd be willing to just withdraw my motion.
And is the seconder okay with that? Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
So the main motion is before us. Is there any unwillingness to vote? Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the commission hereby approves the coastal development permit for the proposed development and adopts the findings set forth in the staff report. Thank you very much. Are we done?
Yes, I think that we are done. And thank you, and the next meeting will be early the first week of November in Oceanside.
Oceanside, we look forward to it. Thank you very much. Travel safely.